So let's start with a date. What's today's date?
Today's March 5th, 2011.
Okay.
I'm back in the 1900s already.
Yeah. And what is your name?
Ann Laughlin.
Okay, and go ahead and tell us where you were born and where you grew up and that kind of
thing. Okay, I've lived here in Missoula, Montana for, about 11 years now. I'm originally from Cherokee, Iowa. Grew up there, a little town over on the western side of the state. Went to school there. Got my master's degree there, and I'm a golf professional right now, an LPGA, PGA teaching professional at the university here.
Where have you lived?
I have lived in a number of cities, mainly because I can move around and still be in my business. So I started out actually in education at the community college and private college level in Council Bluffs, Iowa, Mason City, Iowa, Davenport, Iowa, at a small private college. And then I decided to get into the golf business and lived in Austin, Texas, San Jose, California, and then here in Missoula, Montana.
And you've been here how long?
11 years.
And what do you do for a living now?
Golf professional, teaching pro.
Yeah, okay.
Have my own golf business, Laughlin Golf, at the university, and I teach a little bit at Canyon River here in town, and then I winter in Tucson usually and do some golf outings and so forth down there.
That's great. Now
Tucson, Arizona.
In Arizona, yeah. Now you have a number of things here, but you have taken on like the being the historian for the family. Why have you done that?
Well, it's a question that might not be able to be answered. I kind of ask myself, Ann, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? I just found myself, it's kind of an innate thing that I've done. I've always kind of observed and written things down. I interviewed my grandparents on tape back when I was in, I think, college. Interviewed my grandmother that we're going to talk about in 1979. Just always had an interest in that, and so I don't really know why it's there. I think it's genetic somehow.
And you have Irish heritage on both sides?
I do.
Okay,
yes. My name is Laughlin, but it used to be the pronunciation in Irish is Lachlan, and Loch means lake and Lynn means on the horizon, so it's lake on the horizon. The Lachlans were from County Clare, somehow knocked off the O, like they are prone to do. And my mother was an O'Donohue, and that became Donohue, and she was also from County Clare, her relatives. So the O'Loughlins and the O'Donohues were from the same part of Ireland. And on my mother's side as well, the information that I have here currently will be concerning my mother's side of the family, and those were Colemans and Goldens, which were from County Roscommon.
County Sligo. Okay.
In kind of northern, in the Republic, but in Northern Ireland, north part of Ireland.
Okay. When did your ancestors leave Ireland?
Well, I believe, yes, it'd be my great grandparents. Okay. Yeah, they married in Miles City in 1882, so they left in the early 1880s, like 1880-ish.
1880-ish. Okay. And where did they leave from again?
They left from Ballaghaderreen.
Okay.
And Ballaghaderreen, and that's in County Roscommon.
Great.
Small little burg. I've been there.
How many times have you visited Ireland?
I've been there seven times.
Seven times?
Yeah. Mostly to play golf on the Great Links courses of Ireland, but I've visited my relatives in Roscommon there. There's still some Goldens left there.
Do you know anything about your great-grandparents' lives in Ireland?
I do know that they lived near each other because we've since found that out. My mother and dad went over there and were able to track down, along with a cousin of mine, where they came from. And the houses were, within a mile of each other. So they were neighbors over there, the Colemans and the Goldens. So they knew each other, and they were, they were farmers. I don't think well-to-do. Not a lot were in Ireland back in those days. But we don't know a lot, from there. I know there were very highly religious people, Catholic religion. A number of them, relatives of theirs, went on to become nuns, and I don't know if any went into the priesthood, but very, very religious.
Very religious. What does your Irish ancestry mean to you?
You know, I really, thanks for that question. It's pretty important to me. I find that I've written two books, and I find that at the end of the book, and I kind of, when I sign off, I always sign off an Irish, something about my Irish heritage. So, yeah, it means a lot, especially since going over to Ireland the 7 times that I have and really feeling a connection. I really feel goosebumps the minute I put my foot on the ground. I see the island from above in the airplane, and I start to shake when I get over there. Mm-hmm. It's a very magical place, very magical heritage. Feels like it's very rare, you know, in just the fact that it was an island and we came from a really, really rich history of the landscape and the language and the people all tied together. And it seems like there's a reverence for words over there that people kind of speak in hushed tones and, you know, value words, don't misuse them.
Yeah, the power of the word.
Yeah.
Do you know any stories about how your family first came to the United States?
I do, and it's in also in some of the tape recordings. I have a tape recording that I made of my grandmother, and her father, so my great-grandfather, came up, James Coleman.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he came up the Missouri with a friend of his, J.C. Flynn. And J.C. Flynn got off the boat, the river boat at Yankton, South Dakota. And my grandfather continued on to Miles City. And who knows, you know, why, you know, obviously they didn't have Google Maps to say, oh, I'm going to go to Miles City. I see a nice place to locate. So I don't really know, you know, the only thing I understand is that they just were had to have had amazing strength and endurance to be able to do that. And all the unknown. I remember standing on the shores of near Roscommon County Sligo and looking out at that Atlantic Ocean, and they used to say the next parish is New York City. And you know, thinking how could I don't think I could get on a boat and just go sail into the unknown, and then to arrive in this large country and somehow go across it and get to Miles City, Montana, and make it all happen.
So you don't know exactly why he chose to settle in Miles City, Montana.
No, we don't. We don't really know, because he did have what they call a ranch back then. It was really a farm, but they called it a ranch. So it could have been, you know, the land was free, and they had heard that rumor, and so they thought, well, we'll go west and get some land. At least we know what land can do, you know, and. So it could have been that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How did he make a living? Did he buy the land, or?
James Coleman in Miles City, he had a ranch, and it was a small log cabin on the ranch, so it wasn't any expansive, you know, big place. They raised sheep and had some chickens and a rooster, as my mother recalls, so it would have been her grandfather. But he lived in town, really close to the post office, and he ran the Cottage Saloon. And this was a gathering place for everybody in those days. And in those days, Miles City was really a hub. It was a cattle trading and horse trading, and the Indians were still quite present, and the military. And this man, James Coleman, and his wife were the first white couple married in Custer County.
And what was his wife's name?
Margaret Golden.
Margaret Golden. And then I take it you have a picture of the saloon.
I do. Okay. This is a book called The Frontier Years, and the photographs are by the famous photographer L.A. Huffman, who is from Miles City and had a photo shop there in Miles City. And it's written by, it's called The Frontier Years. As I said, it's by Mark Brown and W.R. Felton. And my great aunt gave this to me, and it was her father that I'm speaking of, James Coleman. And here is the Cottage Saloon. You can see it on the right. This is when Miles City was flooded. This is a picture in the 1800s. And there you can see the Cottage Saloon. It's a rather large building, and all the locals gathered there. It was kind of the meeting place for decisions and so forth. Obviously, they must have sold drinks there, but my mother says no, it was just coffee. But I think there was a little of both, depending on the time of day.
Depending on the time of day, whether it was a coffee shop or a saloon. And can you point out exactly where it's at in the picture?
Yeah, here it is, right here.
Okay.
Right there.
Okay.
Great. And it says here, not only did the saloon provide a permanent fire guard, but Jimmy Coleman's Cottage Saloon functioned in another unique protective capacity.
So he ran the saloon,
and
how long did they stay in Miles City?
They spent their whole life there. And had 9 children.
Okay, and can you name the children?
Yes. Let's see. Let's start with Jokey. Let's see. Nope. The oldest was Honora Winifred Coleman.
Can I have a picture?
I have a picture of Honora, and she died at age 21. She was really a gifted child from the way they speak, and she was sent to go to school at the Ursuline Academy, which was not far from Miles City. I think it was in St. Peter's, Montana. That little town might not be there anymore, and it may not have even been a town. And she died at age 21 of a tumor in Brainerd, Minnesota. She was there for a week, and local family legend has it that she died singing the Ave Maria. She's very religious. So.
You have a picture of her?
I do. Thanks for putting me back on track there,
that's
Lisa.
Okay.
There's Honora.
Yep, and how do you spell her name?
H-O-N-O-R-R-A. Well, here it's H-O-N-O-R-A, Honora Winifred Coleman, and this is in the year 1900, right around there. And there's another picture of her. There's a picture of James Coleman, which we'll show. And there is Honora at the Ursuline Convent around 1901. She's in the center front, right here. And she was an artist and painted and studied accounting and hoping to be a teacher, which was kind of rare back then for women.
Yeah.
But there's notes to the effect that she died in 1904, but her parents, which would be my grandparents, the ones we're talking about, received a note from the academy, and Mother Angela was the... I don't know what they called them, the head nun. And Honora had an account of $11 there, and that included her tuition for 6 months at the academy. So that must be Mother Angela right there.
Yeah.
And there's Honora.
Okay. And then who are the other children?
Then we have... let's see. I might need to read those. Well, let's see. I won't say them in order. I guess they don't need to be in order. So we have Honora. Then the next one was Mary. Then we have Tom and Jim, who were sheep herders, never married and rolled their own cigarettes.
In Miles City.
Mm-hmm. In Miles City. This is all in Miles City. So how many is that? So Honora, Mary, Tom and Jim. Then my mother, or my grandmother, and her twin sister, and that's Josephine and Elizabeth. And Elizabeth was called Hippie. And then we had Jokey, who was one of the sons. There were 3 boys, and his name was John James, and his nickname was Jokey. And he was rumored to have, well, they didn't get the details, but he died in Chicago in a phone booth. They think that he was killed by the mafia. We don't know the details, but they kind of told his mother that he was in an accident when he was brought back to Miles City, that was a closed coffin. And then Sis, whose real name was Helen. So Anne was her name, Anne Coleman, and then Helen. So that made the nine. There were six girls and, and then Ursula Coleman. So it was six girls and three boys, and I'm named after Ursula. It's my middle name.
What's your middle name?
She was the youngest.
Do you want to show the picture of James?
Yes, and here's James, the great-grandfather, James Coleman, that came over from Roscommon, Ballycadarian, in around 1880, I think, and started the Cottage Saloon there in Miles City and had a ranch and raised nine children. And then he lived until he was, I believe, 73 years old, spent his whole life in Miles City.
That's a great picture.
Never got back to Ireland, as far as we know it. The letters that
and
I...
Your great-grandmother did.
She did. Okay. And her name is Margaret Golden. Mm-hmm. And after she married, she went back to Ireland. She had a six-month-old baby and a two-year-old child. And she took the six-month-old. And she took the boat back to Ireland, and it took a month to get there, including all the travel. She went from Miles City to Chicago, and she tells in these letters that we can talk about of buying a winter coat for $40 because she was so cold. She was worried about spending that money. And then when she got on the boat, and she was put, she did not go in steerage, which was the lowest one because she had a baby, so she was able to go in the next capacity on the boat because she had the baby. I think it cost a little bit more, but it was mainly a bed, and I think that was it.
Yeah, still not very good accommodation.
No. And she went over there and stayed over there for 6 or 7 months in Ireland, and then wrote letters back to James Coleman. My mother has the originals, mm-hmm. and I have the copies. Quite interesting. The handwriting is very, very ornate. And if these are copies, and if you have to really sit and kind of take the time to decipher it, I think when my mom made the copies, we didn't really do it in the best order here, so you have to kind of thumb through it to be able to read. But it's quite interesting. It tells... she calls, her husband, James, my dear pet, and speaks of their love and also her religious background, which was very important, her Catholic upbringing. And at the end of one of these, I believe there's a little, I think you had discovered it when we were looking at these, Lisa, mm-hmm. a little poem that she had written.
Yeah.
Kind of a little religious poem.
A little religious poem.
So these are really neat to have. My mother has, the date on this was 1885. It was 85. Mm-hmm. So that would have been 3 years after that would make sense because the baby was two. Mm-hmm. So it was 1885 and they were married in 82.
They were married in 82. And
had a baby a year later. And then she went to Ireland to visit, because she still had relatives over there, and I know he did too. Her two brothers came over as well, Martin Golden and William Golden. And unfortunately, we don't know a lot about William, only that my grandmother says in the tape that I did of her in 1979 when she was 92, that this William Golden, they kind of lost track of him. He went to Butte. And was found dead there, so I don't know what happened.
And do they know why he went to Butte? Okay.
Don't know why. And Martin Golden stayed in Iowa, in Miles City.
In Miles City.
And had two daughters that never married and worked at the local drugstore. They were called the Golden Girls. And one of them actually worked at the movie theater in the olden days where they used to have there was a little glassed-in enclosure that was kind of rounded, and it had a little ticket booth, and there used to be an older woman that would sit there and had a microphone. She'd take the tickets, like you see at a movie theater now, but it was a little more distinctive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what years?
That would have been in the 1920s, 30s, something like that, probably.
Like that. Do you have a picture of the Golden Girls?
I do. I have a picture. Well, I not the Golden Girls, but here's a picture of the James Coleman family. It's the Coleman family with only seven of the children. So this is James Coleman, Margaret Golden, and then seven, one, two, this is my grand. My grandmother is one of those. She's a twin. I'm not sure which one. So Josephine Coleman and Hippie Coleman. And then, so one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. So we're missing two. We're missing Ursula, who was the youngest, and then one other one. So this would have been, Ursula was born in 1901. So this would have been in the probably 1890s.
Late 1890s?
Yeah.
Probably yeah, because there was 1898, 99.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
80, yeah, somewhere in there.
You think it was probably a few years then before Ursula was born?
She was born in 1901.
Okay, so that picture was a few years before then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't see her in here.
Okay.
And the youngest here, there's this little one here, and
what about the baby?
Oh yeah, there's the youngest right there.
I
didn't see that
love.
Little baby. Yeah, so it's hard to know. I suppose this is probably late 1890s. I bet, because there were two yet to come, and Ursula was born in 1901, so the one before her would have been 1898, something like that. Don't know the difference in years, but I do know that my grandmother was in the middle, and her oldest sister was Honora, and Honora was 5 years older. Honora's the one we discussed.
Oh, sorry about that. Probably going to turn that off and stop it for a second. Okay. Pause this. I forgot. I turned that on. Okay, go ahead and talk about where your family lived.
My great-grandparents, I've seen the house because I've driven through Miles City. It's at 2115 East Main Street, and they had a place downtown near the post office, but they bought this house, and Margaret Golden, the great-grandmother, bought the house, and that's specifically stated, so don't know if maybe her family had some money or exactly what, because she's the one that went back to Ireland as well on the boat. So anyway, they bought the house fully furnished, which I don't know if that was a thing.
Do you know what year that was?
No, okay. I don't. Don't know that what year that was.
Okay. Yeah. What do you know about your family name? Where the name came from?
No, not a lot.
Not a lot.
Coleman and Golden, we don't know a lot about that. I do have found the relatives in Ireland. I have a picture of, there's some Goldens and Colemans over there, but the history of the name, you know, I know my name is, I'm all Irish, I have another name that's my name, Lachlan, and I know that means, I knew for a long time that Loch meant lake, and I never knew for the longest time that Lynn meant on the horizon, so it's lake on the horizon. But the Colemans and Goldens, I don't know what that is. Those are a little more common.
Okay. You did talk about the changes in the name. The name changes in the spelling?
Yes.
We went over that?
Okay. Yeah. And that wasn't with regard to the Colemans and Goldens, but on my other side, the other Irish relatives, there were the O'Loughlins and the O'Donohues, and they both, the O'Donohue was my mother's maiden name. They both came from County Clare. Somehow dropped that O when they were signing a deed. You know, I don't really know why that happened, but it was dropped.
And it's no stories. Okay, are there any traditional first names or nicknames in your family?
Yes, a lot of names. This is good. Passing through the generations, we've got a lot. I'm finding, you know, a lot of things you don't come to know until you observe behavior over time and with regard to yourself. I find that I've been a person to give a lot of my family nicknames and a lot of my friends. And I know when you came in and Bernadette had said a lot of the Irish would give nicknames, were there any nicknames? Well, in this particular family, the James Coleman family, there was
my grandmother's twin sister, who was Elizabeth, and they called her Hippie, and we don't know what that was about. She was a small woman, you know, so it wasn't anything related to her hips. But she was not a big woman, and not pushy or anything. She was very meek, always wore white gloves and a hat, and demure. And cleaned, you know, cleaned the chicken like...
You actually have a picture of Hippie with
my glasses,
don't you?
I do have a picture of Hippie. Yes, here she is right here. She doesn't have the white gloves on there, but she's got the dress and no hat.
But she would come and babysit for us when I was younger and came from Miles City. When her husband died, Dan O'Hearn, she came to live with her sister, who was my grandmother, Josephine, and the two of them... Mm. Lived together for 10 or 15 years, and they smoked cigarettes and played poker and kind of argued with each other, rode red westerns, stayed up late, and had dry senses of humor. Anyway, we got a little off track, but this
That's
is Hippie
wonderful.
In Miles City. And Joe and Hippie, the twins, they'd kind of, Joe would give Hippie a hard time. Hippie'd get up to go to the grocery store, and she'd put on her white gloves and her hat. Joe would say, Hippie. And so finally she eventually kind of lost that habit, but she would even put on her white glove when she smoked her cigarette. So, and they watched the soap operas, and they used to, you know, oh, that old guy, that old reprobate, they'd say. That was their favorite word. They'd kind of call people reprobates.
I think you have a reprobate. I think you have a color picture of her in with gloves.
Well, let's see here. You know what? This is her youngest sister. Good point. This is the youngest sister, Ursula, the one whom I'm named after, middle name, mm-hmm. for the Ursulines out of Montana, near Miles City. And you note she has the white gloves on.
Hmm.
And this is a picture of her. She lived in New York City. And here we go with the gloves. My mother went to visit. And in New York City, and this is my mother, and this is Ursula. And note my mother... He has the white gloves on, and this is probably circa 19, late 60s probably.
Circa 1960s?
Yeah, late 60s, and that's my mother, and that's Ursula, the youngest Coleman, and she lived in New York City in an apartment with her husband. It was rent-controlled. It was on East 72nd Street, and they paid $200 a month rent. And this apartment was a huge, I mean, you know, it was right across from Central Park. But it was under rent control, so the rent couldn't be raised. So she lived there forever. And she died when she was 90, and my mother would go and visit her. And so there's the white gloves with the purses.
That's great. Any more nicknames other than Hippie?
Hippie had a brother whose name was John James, and they called him Jokey. He was the one that died in Chicago, and then we had another one named Anne, and they called her Sis. And a lot of the names have been passed down, like my mother had a brother, and they named him James Coleman Donahue, so he was named after his grandfather. Tom was one of my mother's brother's names. In my family, who I have five sisters and a brother, we all have nicknames. We're red-haired, and a couple of us have black hair. So my oldest sister with really red hair is called Fox, and my nickname was Sheriff because I played with guns and holsters when I was growing up, so my dad gave me that nickname. And I have a sister whose name is Joan Marie, and we nicknamed her Jomie. And then another sister named Catherine Elizabeth, and we called her Betsy, and the nickname for that was Old Betty.
Okay.
Old Betty. And another sister named Barbara, who we called Beeper Dane. So we did have nicknames, all of us. And I find a lot of the names, you know, Irish names, Patrick, have been passed down, you know, through the three or four generations.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit. You mentioned the name Daniel O'Hearn.
Right.
Talk about that a little
well,
bit in relation to your family.
Okay. Daniel O'Hearn was a judicial court judge here in Montana. He went to law school at the University of Iowa, came to Montana, and he met this hippie that I've talked about. They met and married and lived in Miles City their whole life.
And he was known around the state as an orator, as they called them in those days. He actually held a number of state offices, elected offices, and he was good friends with Senator Mike Mansfield. And he and Hippie had no children. So I have a scrapbook that Hippie compiled. Again, Hippie and her fastidiousness compiled a lot of clippings from Dan and his life. And here you'll get a sense of it. As I said, he was from Fort Dodge, Iowa, but he went to law school in Iowa, University of Iowa, and then came to Montana. And
he served in Montana.
Yes, he was a district court judge, and a number of other offices too, and I don't have my glasses on to read exactly what it all is, but as you can see, Hippie collected all these pictures, and let me just look here and see if I can get one of Dan. I'll put my glasses on real quick. Daniel O'Hearn, he ran in the Democratic Party for states for representative in the legislature. And a Democratic candidate for the House, here he is right here, and it says above him, elected. Right there.
And then you said he also worked with women's suffrage, is that correct?
I believe it was during the years that women's suffrage, I'm trying to remember what, there was an article in here about that. Daniel O'Hearn, a young man who is climbing above his fellows in western Montana is Daniel L. O'Hearn, the bright young lawyer who is seeking election as a member of the Missoula delegation in the lower house of the state legislature. He is a type of young man who gets ahead. He's strenuously aggressive. He has positive conviction, and he has force, energy, and spirit. So he did move to, it looks like he lived in Missoula for a little while. He was born in Barnum, Iowa. Graduated from Tobin College at Fort Dodge and the University of Iowa Law School. Came directly to Missoula and hung out his shingle. He has a good law practice and has served at intervals as acting county attorney. If elected to the legislature, as he assuredly will be, he will peel off his linen and work night and day for a direct primary law of the excellent Oregon type. He favors, too, a law providing for the commission form of government in cities, a plan with whose operation he is familiar. This is a brand new question of policy that is now inviting earnest consideration throughout the country. It is a popular reform. Surely a long step toward more representative government. This was around...
It's like absolutely everything that he did,
yes,
he took care of.
And this is in 1910, I'm seeing now as I look more into it. Yeah. And there's a lot of the telegrams in here from... and early politicians. I don't know what year that telegram came. But quite interesting to see some of these clippings. Hippie really did a good job. I imagine she wore white gloves when she did this kind of a thing. I'll just thumb through here very quickly. There's an article. I was looking for something on the oration part of the story, because there is
the orator. Okay.
Yeah. And he played on the Glendive baseball team in 1914. That must have been, he played right field. Must have been after he moved over to Miles City, and that's where he met my great aunt. Judge O'Hearn on the bench in Miles City, newly appointed presiding jurist of the 16th District, shoulders duties. A Daniel come to judgment, exclaimed old Shylock, according to the late William Shakespeare. Miles City can get right in line with the ancient money king as the newly appointed judge for the 16th District, Dan O'Hearn of Glendive, assumed his place on the bench in this district at the courthouse here yesterday. He arrived Thursday and filed his oath of office with the district clerk yesterday, a similar document being filed with the Secretary of State. He made a brief talk to the members of the local bar, most of whom were present. For a stenographer, Judge O'Hearn selected J.S. Coward of this city, who has been employed in that capacity in the office of Master Mechanic Anderson of the Milwaukee.
Any chance that local bar would have been your great-grandfather's?
I don't know.
Okay.
Don't know. Let's see here.
There's the one of women's suffrage.
Yeah, never dodged women's suffrage. This was in 1026, 1916, The American, which I don't know what newspaper that is. As a member of the legislature, Judge O'Hearn worked to enfranchise women. Judge Dan O'Hearn of the district court and candidate for re-election was born in Iowa 34 years ago. He was educated in country schools, Tobin College, and the University of Iowa, where he completed his legal degree. After finishing, he came to Montana to practice law, located in Missoula. His winning personality gave him a law practice and a personal following from the outset. In 1910, he was elected a representative in the legislature on the Democratic ticket. In the state legislature, Mr. O'Hearn quickly developed into one of the leaders of the House. He championed the cause of T.J. Walsh and was one of the leaders in the unsuccessful fight to elect the great Helena Lawyer to the U.S. Senate. While a member of the legislature, O'Hearn encountered the woman suffrage question and did not dodge it, as so many politicians did. He was chairman of the House Committee on Development and Publicity, and during the session, a resolution submitting a woman suffrage amendment to the voters of Montana was referred to his committee. The idea was that it would be buried there, but Mr. O'Hearn promptly reported it favorably and thus compelled a vote upon the question on its merits. Miss Jeanette Rankin of Missoula was given the privilege of the floor of the House to speak in favor of the resolution, and when the vote was counted, it had passed the House. It died there, however, and was heard of no more until the next session. And that was in 1916.
Gives me goosebumps.
I know it. I hadn't read that. That's really something, isn't it?
I know.
That wasn't that long ago.
No. Really not.
Wow.
Hmm.
Well, I'm honored to know that he, you know, promoted women's suffrage.
It's quite the memento you have there.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go to your mother.
Okay. And
yeah,
I do have, I don't know, did I show this picture? We were talking about the white gloves. Here are the sisters.
Oh, yeah. We were.
And that looks
first.
Like my grandmother right there. So there's five of them here. So we're missing one. Don't know which one, but there they all are again. They hung out in groups. I mean, all the sisters, you know, always did things together. And I find we do that in my family too, the sisters, and I have a brother too, but we all really, a lot of sense of family and community.
Sense of family, community. What kind of things did they do together?
Well, good question. On the tape that my grandmother, my grandmother made, where I interviewed her when she was 92, they had a lot of chores to do. Like they had to clean house on New Year's Day every year. They had to scrub the floors to get it ready for the new year. They had bonfires, and they went down to the Tongue River outside of Miles City, and that's where they had the bonfires, and they had dances. My grandmother talks about being courted by a fellow that came up in a one-horse buggy. And she dated one of the Hunt brothers, who came up from Texas, and he proposed to her, actually. I think it was H.L. Hunt, the famous oil man, and she talks about him, and she did not like him. She turned him down for the proposal. And I guess, you know, these women were touted as some of the most available, you know, marrying available, what would you call it? Single women. There's a word for it. I can't think of it.
Okay.
So anyway, and her father, she speaks of it, would be my great-grandfather, James Coleman, would be waiting inside the door when they would come home from a date, and he'd open the door and tell them to come in now. And so it wasn't a lot of, they did a lot of things, I think, in groups, the dances she talks about, and they played a few games, she said, like kick the ball, croquet, and my grandmother did not like croquet. She really found that not very exciting. She was kind of a little risk taker. She liked to ride horses. Her twin sister, Hippie, did not like a horse. She was meek, as my grandmother says, and stayed inside and liked to clean.
Oh, wow.
So
your mother?
So my mother is a twin as well.
Yeah.
And so twins.
And here's a picture of my mother, I believe. She's,
should I wait?
What are we doing for, how are we doing for time here?
Good. I just have to change that card.
Are we, okay. This way. It's been 41 minutes. We're doing good. Okay.
And this, oops, should I go?
Okay.
And this is my mother. She's Joanne Laughlin. Her maiden name was Donahue, married my father, Laughlin. And my father passed away 10 years ago, and my mother remarried, and this is right after she remarried. I believe she's 76 or 7 here.
In the picture, how old is she now?
She's 83 now.
83 now.
Yeah, and she was a twin,
twins really run in the family.
Twins do run in the family. I think none of my sisters or brother had twins. I always had a feeling if I had children, which I don't, that I would have had twins. But here's my mother and I. And here we are doing a fun project. We always like to make twice-baked potatoes.
Can you talk about that, the food? You felt twice-baked potatoes were an Irish...
We love potatoes.
Uh-huh.
My mother, we just love potatoes, you know. I guess, I don't know if it really, I'm sure it has something to do with being Irish because potatoes was a main, you know, dish.
Was there any kind of Irish dishes that you ate?
No, we didn't. We didn't do, you know, Irish stew or anything like that, or corned beef and cabbage. Not really. My mother is a very good cook, and so she cooks a variety of things. And she knows a lot of homespun, remedies for things. And I've been interviewing her as well to...
What kind of homespun remedies?
Oh, like one thing, you know, like to put a damp washcloth in the dryer with your clothes. So they won't come out wrinkled. I mean, who knows that, you know? It's like a Halloween tip. And she has all these tips, and I said, Mother, people don't know that. Oh, she kind of waves her hand, you know.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, that's nothing, no big deal. She has something, you know, just little things like that that make, like, a huge difference in things.
Mm-hmm. And is that, like, homeopathic remedies?
Certain things like that. I'm trying to think other things. Like when she's cooking, there'll be certain things she knows to do, to tell you to do it a certain way that really makes a difference. Like the succession of the ingredients or little tips on, you know, like we have an iron skillet that's very, very old. And I was getting ready to wash it when I was home at Christmas, and she said, no, you just rub it with oil.
Yeah, you don't wash it
and a lot of people know that, but some don't, and I didn't know that, so... Mm-hmm. Things like that, that very, very helpful. Of course, she raised 7 children. But very wise, you know, I think that my grandmother, too, very wise people, cut to the chase kind of a thing.
How long did your mother live in Miles City?
Well, so my grandmother, Josephine Coleman, was courted by a fellow named John Donahue. And his nickname was Jigs. There we go with the nickname again. He was a cattle buyer from Sioux City.
Okay.
So he took a trip out to Miles City and met my grandmother, and she liked him. They got married back, and she went back to Sioux City, Iowa with him and got married. So my mother actually grew up in Sioux City but would visit Miles City on occasion in the summers. I think she went to school one summer there too, as did her brother. So she grew up in Iowa. But she tells of taking, of course, before there were freeways and paved roads, my mother would drive back to Miles City with her dad, and she was 14, and they'd drive the dirt roads from Iowa to Miles City, and it was a long way, and her dad let her, my mother, drive, and of course, she's 14, didn't have a driver's license, but here she is driving the car back to Miles City.
What year was
she? She would have been 1939. She was born in, she was born in 1927, so it would have been 41.
So it would have been
1941 when she drove the dirt roads through Iowa and South Dakota and into Miles City. And then, you know, talking, we can get back to what we were saying, but I'm sidetracking again, but one of my grandmother's sister married a fellow from Sweden, and they had the first electric car in Miles City, as well as the first electric first washer without a wringer.
Wow, not all that long ago.
Yeah, but and here's a picture of my mother with her twin brother, Tom Donahue, and then that's Josephine Coleman there, and this is on her 100th birthday.
And there was a poem written for Josephine Coleman's 100th birthday.
There was.
Yeah.
There was. Would you like me to find that?
Yeah, if you would read that.
It was written by, we had a big party for Joe Coleman, my grandmother, who grew up in Miles City, and it was in Sioux City and at the boat club there, and all the relatives came, the cousins and all the children. And I don't know who this person is that wrote this poem, but it kind of sums up my grandmother's life, because
this being Josephine Coleman.
Yes, Josephine Coleman. This was written in June 1987, which, yes, my grandmother would have been 100 because she was born in 1887. And for the longest time, she and her twin sister, Hippie, would argue about the year they were born. But when Hippie moved back to Sioux City to spend time with Joe after Hippie's husband, Dan O'Hearn, had died, they discovered that, yeah, it was 1887, and Hippie was right. And Joe always thought it was 88, so she was a year older than she thought she was. So this is by James Wooster, and he must have been a family friend. And it's entitled Margaret, because my grandmother's name was Josephine, was Margaret Josephine, but she went by Josephine or Joe. Miles City was something 100 years back. This fellow might be from Miles City. W-O-S-T-E-R, first name James. Miles City was something 100 years back. Miners and ranchers and lonely line shacks. A child was born to Margaret and Jim, a daughter named Margaret. She was one among 10. Life wasn't easy for anyone then, canning and cooking and washing by hand. Then the leprechaun grinned and changed Margaret's life when Jigs said, "Begorra, you'll be a fine wife." 6 children were born, 5 boys and a son, and a Joan, that's my mother. She considered them perfect, still does, though they've grown. She nurtured and cared, she taught and she prayed, trusting her God to help out along the way. A Donahue trait is it's a card game, no doubt. If Joe takes a hand, it's best to look out. Poker, gin rummy, bridge, or old maid, any game's fine if the grandchildren play. Grandma Joe was a sight in her 98 olds, a fire-red jumpsuit and paint on her toes. This car's rather slow, it must be the plugs. It should really go faster, it's driving me bugs. You know there's a word that's more special than others. It's encompassing, beautiful, simply just mother. And the Donahue clan is truly blessed from above, and they've had a century of this so special love. So, Mother, we love you and thank you today for teaching us right and for help along the way, for being so special and our knowing you care. Mouse City must be heaven. Grandma Jo came from there. So she was painted her toes and played cards and loved to gamble with the card games and played a lot of poker. She and Hippie would have poker games where their friend, the ladies would come in and they'd play poker. Mm-hmm. And she'd have a glass of scotch, you know, only one. That was kind of her, I think that kept the blood flowing through her veins, she said.
And then she passed away peacefully, you know, she just died peacefully. And without any problem. And I think I showed that picture. Did I show that picture of her? I might not have.
And that was the picture of her right around the...
She's 100.
At 100.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Margaret Josephine Coleman.
Now, did we talk about your great-grandparents being the first... They're being the first to marry.
I don't know if we did.
It seems like not in front of the camera. A little bit, yeah.
So they married in 1882, James Coleman and Margaret Golden, after they settled there in Miles City, and they were the first white couple to marry in Custer County at Fort Keogh. Okay. And we have that certificate, and they were married by Father Nelson, who was an army priest. And I believe that her two brothers, Margaret Golden's brothers, stood up for them, and maybe his one of the brothers' wife, I think Martin's wife, whose name was Bridget. And so it was, you know, wasn't a lot of white settlers in that area then, because the oldest one, Honora, that went to the convent with the Ursulines, Mother Angela held Honora when she was a baby because the nuns were somewhat involved. My great-grandmother would give the nuns food and mm-hmm. very nun-oriented. And the Mother Angela held Honora, and it was the first white baby that she had held. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of Native Americans in the area. My mom speaks of a lot of Native Americans around town in Miles City there. And of course, the Custer's last stand was not far from there. A lot of battles there. So, pretty amazing. They were really pioneers.
Mm-hmm. They were. Let's see. Do you want to show the picture of your mom, the younger one?
Yeah.
What year was that? And then
this
that was,
one?
Yeah. And then was that your father? No, that was...
That's my mother's oldest brother,
okay,
James
Coleman.
Okay,
we need to talk about that because he was the golfer.
Yeah, okay. That's a connection. So here's my mother. I think this is when she was 17. So she's a little high school girl, and, I've since interviewed her about things, and she had naturally curly hair. She was black-haired, and my father had red hair, Irish. So my mom talks about they would take, I think it was orange cans, because they didn't have rollers back then, and they'd roll their hair around the can and clip it mm-hmm. to make the curls. But she had naturally curly. So
what year was that?
She was 17, so 1927 plus 17, 37, 44.
1944.
And then this is her as a little girl. In Sioux City on her bicycle. And then here is she and her twin brother. Looks like with an older brother, that might be her older brother, James, but there's my mom and her twin brother, and then that must be her oldest brother, James Coleman Donahue. There were six in her family, my mother's. Yeah, it says the Coleman Donahue babysitting, Tom and Joanne, the twins. This is at the Pine Hills Picnic, Miles City, Montana. Mm-hmm. in the Pine Hills was a, I think an area outside of Miles City that was just named the Pine Hills. I suppose a lot of pine trees out there and maybe plateaus and that kind of thing. And they had picnics out there. Uh-huh. Very cute. And they have an Indian blanket there too, I see. Huh. And then my mother's oldest brother.
Talk about your mother's oldest.
Yes, his name was James Coleman. There's your names that
then
carry on down.
Okay.
Donahue, and he was the oldest, and he died of an appendicitis attack. They didn't have, of course, the doctors. He was born in 1918, and he died in 1932, so he was 14 when he died. Mm. Is that right? 10, 19, 20, 32, that'd be 14? Age
14?
Yeah, I
know, quick
math here.
I'm an English person, not a math person.
I'll tell you what, he was a golfer, and he won every title around in Sioux City, state titles. He was, I guess, the athlete of the year. He was a junior champion. Very highly touted, and he had... as I said, he had four brothers, and then my mother was his sister. She was the youngest. The other brothers were exceptional golfers. One was the captain of the Notre Dame golf team. His name was Phil Donahue. And the other one was the captain of the Georgetown golf team, Jack Donahue. And here's a picture of James Coleman Donahue. He died of appendicitis. They had no help, and it got gangrene. You know, and they just, so he died very young. I think he died 2 years after this picture was taken. Because he's 14 here, and I think he was 16. So I think that's where my golf blood comes from, is from the Coleman Irish side there. Although my dad took me out to play a lot, but I never got to play golf with my uncles. But, I went on to become a golf professional myself, mm-hmm. and that's what I currently
am. Golfed in Ireland?
I have. So I've made 7 trips back to Ireland, 5 of them golfing trips to play the Great Links courses. And in those travels, I've discovered family homes, not only for my mother's father's side, but I've also gone and met with the Goldens, who are still there in outside of Ballyhaderin, where my great-grandmother and grandfather grew up, and I've seen the home that they lived in.
What's the home look like?
It's in disrepair, and there's a barn, a barn there, but you know, it's kind of in disrepair. It's interestingly enough, the relatives that are currently alive, that house got passed along, so my Margaret Golden, my grandmother's mother, her family passed that house down through the generations, because the Goldens, Sean Golden, who is still alive, and his picture is right here, he moved down the road and built a different house, but it's not far from that family home.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a picture of me and one of those trips. That's me, and that's Sean Golden, and that's his wife Bridget, and they live not far from the original family home outside of Ballyhaderin in County Roscommon, not far from Sligo as well. And here is another picture of Sean and his daughter Fina Golden, who has been over to visit our family in Iowa, and then her mother Bridget Golden. So we're thrilled to have made this connection, and they've given us a lot of family information too, which I, you know, told us where certain people are located, and the Colemans just down the road. And my mother was able to visit along with my dad, another relative, another Golden relative, and sat in one of the other houses that one of the relatives had grown up in. They still have the peat fire and everything. So, and then here's a picture of me playing golf in Ireland. And of course, I look like I'm part of the landscape there. I just love.
What makes you say that?
Well, I look so natural is what I like to think. But this is up in Ballyhaderin.
Feel like home, maybe.
I felt like I was at home. Yeah, really? I do. Just feel like I've gone home. Mm. It's like I just exhale when I go there, you know. Mm. It's very interesting. I've not ever experienced that phenomenon before. Mm. This is up in the north part of the Republic, in Ballyliffin, I believe, way up in the North Sea. Mm. In a beautiful golf course. Not far from Sligo.
So I guess maybe
I could show the last picture here of
just as well.
of my family.
Oh, this is your family.
This is my family. This is my mother, and this was on her 70th birthday. So this would have been, she was born in 1927. So this would have been in 97.
Okay.
So that's been, what would that be, 14 years ago. Yeah. We're not math people, are we?
She was 70 now.
She's 70.
Yeah, she was 70.
And there's my oldest sister, myself, my brother, and then four younger sisters. There's seven of us.
All of you with nicknames?
We all have nicknames. We do, yeah. A lot of nicknames there. And I'm finding I gave a lot of them. One other thing I discovered, and this might not be, maybe it's documented, and I can't remember where I discovered this, but I think when it was I went to Ireland, and I go with a good friend named Casey Mahon, who's an old college friend. We go to play golf. And I would find, just in my whole life, when people would ask me questions, and I've done a little bit in this interview, I never will just say yes or no. You know, it's never a yes or no. It's always like an explanation of something, and that leads to something else. Well, I found out that's an Irish trait. You'll never get a yes or a no.
Yes or no.
Yeah, it's like when you ask for directions in Ireland, you know, like when I went to Kilfenora and looked for the relatives on my mother's father's side, I went into the pub and asked, do you know where Jimmy O'Donohue lives? Because I knew it was a small town. It's near the Burren. Mm-hmm. And I knew he was near there. So they said, oh, yes, Jimmy O'Donohue. It was a Sunday afternoon. And I thought, well, you know, we'll just try it. They said, you go down to the corner, go down to the four cross, take a left. No, go down to the corner, take a left, go through the four cross, go down the hill, past the lake, and he'll be the first house on the left. And I went back and said to my friend, you know, this is where we'll find him. And she said, oh, we'll never find him, Annie. And I said, let's just try it. So we followed the directions to the T. Sure enough, get down there. And there's a slate house, you know, a roof with a slate, house with a slate roof. And I go up, and there's, the door is ajar. And there's a slight drizzle out. And my mm-hmm. friend says, she's reading the Irish Times. She says, you go up, Annie, and see if, you know, she's not thinking, oh, well, or they aren't going to find, you know, the relatives. So the door is ajar. And I can hear people inside. And there's, just like in, you'd see in the movies, there's smoke coming out of the chimney. And I knock on the door, and the man appears, and I said, Jimmy O'Donohue. And he looked at me, and he said, 'tis himself. Mm. So it was Jimmy O'Donohue, who is actually my mother's father's brother's son.
Wow.
Yeah, and I went in and spoke with him, and he said, do you realize you're sitting in the house that your great-grandfather grew up in? So that sent shivers through me. So it's really neat to have a sense of connection. I think that's what Ireland does for me, is it really grounds me and realize that, you know, through all these generations, we came from somewhere. We didn't just appear, you know, from down the corner. I mean, it's really a deep, rich sense of belonging, I think, is what it does. And I kind of find comfort in knowing that there's all these relatives that came before me and had a rich life without maybe having the technology that we have today, but they learned how to enjoy themselves and enjoyed, you know, their lives, it seems like, and made a life for themselves coming over across the sea in the 1800s.
We all came from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe the one, I guess, this would pertain to you. What do you believe are the most striking changes in your life so far?
What's
the greatest moments, maybe?
In my life? And I'm 59, so I don't really feel like I'm old because I feel a lot younger than that. So
you go.
You know, when I look back on some of this, some of the most striking changes, gosh, you know, I suppose you'd probably go to the... I know my mother talks about the fact that when she was growing up in the 30s, they did not have medications. You know, you did not have pills for things, and you never went to the doctor. I mean, a lot of people died because you could be operated on for a structural problem, a bone, but as far as anything else, couldn't really take care of it. They didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. I guess that people live longer than they used to, you know, in like my mom's time and the people before that. I mean, I'd be considered an old woman now, and I feel like I'm far from it. I feel like I'm kind of a young yet. So I guess there's that we live a lot longer, mm-hmm. and the medicine bounds, you know, the strides that have been made there. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have to say the internet and the computer, but I don't do my business around that. So I would say, you know, even since growing up in the 60s, I think the one thing that, you know, I noticed growing up is we really enjoyed playing. And I think we got that from maybe just the time, but I think there's a little of the Irish in that because we always would go in the basement and do plays and dress up in the old great aunt's costumes from the attic and the old books we'd get out and read a play and we'd have grocery stores and you know we went out and climbed trees and dug holes in the ground and made caves and made forts and you know we just went out and went and the activities weren't organized. Nowadays everything's really structured and organized, and I think people don't have curiosity. I think that's one of the changes. There's no curiosity for things, like to find out about things, unless you can punch a button and have it appear before you magically. So, I mean, it's even been said that people don't know. They think that information comes from Google.
Yeah.
Whatever that it might be, you know, like the door behind the Wizard of Oz, the curtain is pulled, and there's the, you know, the man that knows everything. Well, you know, somebody had to put that information in Google. So I'm kind of the old school, although I'm pretty savvy with the internet as much as, you know, savvy goes. But I think we lack curiosity about things. And I think my thrill about going to Ireland is to remind me that there's still magic out there. And it is real.
It is real.
We forget that in the modern day.
Okay, last question. If you were to write the history of the Irish in Montana, what would you include for future generations?
I would let people know that, you know, and with the connection I have, that my great-grandparents had great courage and great wisdom and great strength and great creativity to just go out there and to unknown place that where they didn't really know where they were going to get their next meal or lay their head and create a life for themselves. So, you know, if ever the future generations of Montanans think that they can't do something, think of all the props that we have that allow us to do what we do, and that we do have, if stripped away of all of that, we do, when it can get down to it, have a lot there that we can rely on that maybe we don't know about.
Well, thank you very much.
You're
it's
welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I have too.
You're welcome.
We've enjoyed Brandon.
Thank you, Brandon.
The guy behind the camera.
For taping.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.